Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Mr. Ryan's fifth grade class was beginning a new unit studying ancient Egypt. The students settled into their seats, ready for their handouts and worksheets. They looked up in surprise as they saw their teacher putting on a frighteningly real papier-mâché mask of an ancient Egyptian deity. "We're going to go back to another time," he announced from behind his disguise, "and we will try to imagine what it must have been like to live in the times of the Egyptian gods. Here are your tools to begin." And he produced from the art room supplies for each student to make his own mask. From a parent's perspective, how significant is hands-on learning in a child's education? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today's guest works with creatively hand-on approaches for students. Barbara Sarbin, because she believes most people learn best through hands-on experience, brings her creative courses and workshops into schools and communities. She helps children reconnect with nature and enrich their sensory experiences. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Barbara.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
What do we mean by hands-on learning?
It is what it says, you know, putting your hands on and basically learning by doing, learning through experience. And I was recently looking up these words in the dictionary because I like to, when I use words often, you think you know what they mean, but then if you go back and you look them up, you see that they deepen. And I found out that experience means, in its original root of the word, it means to prove. So people prove things through their experience. So I found that hands-on learning is a way of actually doing and proving the experience for yourself, which you might not then be able to explain to somebody else, but it never gets taken away from you because it's in you. So that's how I describe it.
It's very individualized.
Completely. And in that sense, because it's so personal, it has very deep meaning for you. And I understand that in education today, I was speaking to someone who's studying education in college, and she said, you know, they're looking for powerful experiences. They want you to find ways to introduce children to powerful experiences, and that's how children learn best.
What could be more powerful than doing it yourself?
Oh, well,
having that power.
Yeah, nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Now, we understand that this is also connected in some way with Native American cultures. Can you explain that connection?
Sure, absolutely. In fact, I wanted to mention a particular book in relation to it because this is something that I've learned through relatives of mine who are Native American. But it's also it's backed up in many books about Native American approach to education, which really is not just Native American. It would be all indigenous peoples. And actually, it would be really original education, which would be through the senses, through the faculties, using the mind, the instinct, the heart, because books wouldn't have been the way of learning. Mm-hmm. And the way that Native American people approach education with children is more holistic. It's more experiential. It's more through dealing with an educator or a teacher who might be an elder, it might be a relative, might be a friend, who has a love of something, a skill in something, and you want to the expression I'll use is catch the way of what that person is doing. You want to learn, whether it's being a basket maker or a weaver or a gardener, that you spend time with that person in what they're doing. And they might then allow you to help and through the process of the helping teach you bits and pieces. But what they're passing to you is not just the skill, but everything that that's connected to, because there's stories about the plants that you might be using for making the basket that are from folklore or legend. And then that brings in the beliefs and the values and the respect, because all the work in original kinds of education would be oral, would be hands-on, it would be live. It wouldn't be written about so much in books, but there are books that describe it. And something which I found probably about 12 years ago is a book called Keepers of the Earth. And that is really designed to help children make connection to the earth through different activities so that it is more hands-on, not just being spoken about. I think what's become a difficulty, something that's described a lot in newspapers and reports, is retention, children's ability to remember things. And it has to do with a style of education that requires that you hear about something, right? You listen to someone explaining about something, and then you've got to memorize that, or you read it, you've got to memorize it, and then you've got to repeat it. But it's not really learned. So when you have, like what I was saying before, a powerful experience with something that's really throughout the whole of you and is affecting all your senses, you don't forget it. So you remember all different kinds of threads of connections. So then to be able to take that and teach another would be a way of repeating it that causes much greater retention. So that's the Native American connection with it.
Would you repeat the title of the book? And Sure. Is there an editor or a publisher or something that we can refer to?
Yeah, Keepers of the Earth, Joseph Bruschak, and also, I don't know how to say the other gentleman's name correctly, but I'll just say it, Michael Caduto, so it's C-A-D-U-T-O. And Joseph Bruschak is a writer who's done many, many books. And there's a series in this Keepers of the Earth series, which is very useful for teachers to take different kinds of concepts and principles, whether they're scientific or historical, and actually go out into the field with the children. So I've found that to be a useful book, and it's really the only book of its kind that I know.
Why do you think so many people do find it easier to absorb new material through their own experience? I mean, we've been raised in a society where we read, where you study from a book or papers.
Right. Well, books are great. And I have to say, you know, when I was in college, I loved literature, but I also loved theater. And I think there have been a tremendous amount of studies done, you know, scientific studies, researches that have proven that people learn best by experience. So it's not a new idea. It's a known thing. I was thinking of how many sayings there are, you know, experience is the best teacher. And I was thinking about a particular example of this has to do with, the story that you started the program with, Ancient Egypt. One of the things that I do is I go into schools and teach, at least in New York State, Egypt is part of the New York State curriculum for sixth grade. I don't know how it is throughout the country. But often when I speak to the social studies teachers about that or Native American traditions, which is something else that I do, I'll say, well, what have you done so far? And they'll say, well, we've read the chapter in the book. You know, that's what they've done, which is just, you know, there's no penetration into the essence of that time and place. And so what I'm invited to do is to come in and within an hour or a little bit longer, bring the children inside of an experience of Egypt or an experience of the Native American beliefs that will cause a connection for them to it in a much deeper way. So, for example, with Egypt, I'll start with slides of Egypt. And I ask the children to just watch the slides, and I'll play ancient Egyptian music with that that was created on Egyptian instruments. And just to see what catches them. The idea being to come at it through awe and wonder and magic and what do they fall in love with. And what happens is by doing that, they just open up. And as soon as they open up, they have an experience of it that no one can take away. And it's amazing to listen to them afterwards to say what it is that's caught their attention. Now, sometimes the teachers will say, well, can you identify every picture in the slides? And I say, well, I can, but that's not the point. Later, that would be a good thing to do once they've fallen in love with it. And then they want to know the information, you know, where is this pyramid or, you know, what is the Sphinx about really? But it's more to come at it through wonder that opens up the systems and causes a kind of an awe. That then what we'll do is add into that through, like what you're describing in your story, putting on masks, acting out stories. And there's been incredible feedback from that process. So I think there's something about what happens with experience using all of the senses, the eyes, the ears, sense of smell, sense of taste, even when we do Native American, we do taste and smell. And that it causes a a harmony. It causes a balance of the systems and of the faculties that then allow for greater retention, because in a sense you've I'm sitting here doing this physically. You've tied yourself to the whole experience with the whole of your body and mind and feelings and instinct, and very, very different from just reading, which is just going to go through the eyes and the brain, which is good, but it's only one part.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. Today we are talking about hands-on learning with Barbara Sarban.
I was thinking when you were talking about this about kids who have ADHD or other issues, that those kids must be particularly attracted to a more sensory-oriented approach. What about these kinds of kids who come from disadvantaged backgrounds, kids who enter with other issues that make it more difficult for them? How do they benefit from this?
Well, I can only speak from my own experience because I'm not a scientific researcher, so I don't actually know what statistically has been said or proven about it. But simply in my own experience, the most important thing to me as an educator is to help children keep as many channels open as possible and to not block anything. And a lot of times when children come into either my courses or I direct a summer camp, they come into the situation with already some kind of damage from their lives and some kind of imbalance that's a result of that. It's finding the ways to bypass that. And using all of the senses can tend to kind of bypass something that's blocked. And I found, for example, with theater, that for some reason, most children, really by majority, respond very, very well to theater. And again, just in my experience, that children will have a tendency to judge themselves where it comes to writing or drawing or painting, that they will very often say, oh, it's not good, you know, or I don't know how to write, or and they'll right away block themselves. But for some reason, when it comes to using their bodies and being physical, that they will actually try.
Do you think that it's a process over product kind of thing? In other words, when you put something down on a piece of paper, when you have a product that you can see, it's more easily apt to be evaluated in a way. But if you're doing something physical, it's more of a process.
Sure, and it's live. You know, it's not being recorded. So, I mean, unless you're videoing it. And I don't know really, honestly, what it is about that. It may have to do with the training that we receive in school and the idea that you receive marks for what you do. And not too many children do theater in school, and certainly you don't receive marks for it if you do. So there's a kind of something natural in children that loves to give expression. And I found in over 20 years of teaching, which is scary to say, that especially, say, for adolescent children, it's extremely valuable to have a way of expressing what they're feeling, what's bothering them, through a method where they don't feel self-conscious. And also something that can promote a bit of self-worth and self-esteem and self-confidence and trust and teamwork. And I find theater does all of that. So if you approach any subject, and I find this especially works with things like history, where you bring it alive. If I do things on the Renaissance, we do Renaissance dancing, because then you feel the actual experience of the knight and the lady in the court. And it does something to you. It makes you stand up straighter. Children will say to me, if we do with Egypt, the weighing of the hearts, which is a story, and they'll act it out, they'll say that they feel special. You know, so it really doesn't matter what kind of a background someone comes from, you know, economically or socially. If they feel special, they feel special. And if I can do anything to cause a reconnection for a child to what makes them special as a human life, then I feel like I've done a service and I can go home happy. And I think, you know, we all have senses. We all have the same faculties that we're born with. And that makes us all equal in that sense. And so if things can get brought alive in that way, I don't think anyone's at a disadvantage when it comes to that. I would say just one other story about it, which has to do with dealing with a child that might have an emotional problem, an emotional difficulty. And very often this comes up more and more in current times. Studies that have been done, children are having more violent tendencies. And so in dealing with that, it can be very frustrating because obviously part of our job as educators is to keep things safe. So I have a friend who runs a preschool, and he was helping me to work with a child who was violent and angry. And I said, you know, I don't know how to help this kid, and I don't know what to do to make it easier for him and safer for everyone around him. And what my friend pointed out is, he said, it's not fun for him. If you can come from his perspective, he's not actually enjoying it. So we had a day at camp this summer where these wonderful storytellers were coming, and this little boy got angry and didn't want to come and hear the storytellers, and everyone was gathered around them, and I thought, oh, what am I going to do? Because I don't want this child to block this channel of learning, because he's going to love it. But how am I going to do it? And the way in for me was compassion, was he's not enjoying this. He's not actually enjoying being angry, and this isn't fun for him. So it allowed me to come into where he was and make a deal with him to come and sit with the storytellers, and that I would look at my watch, and after 5 minutes, if he hated it, then it was okay, we could go and do something else. And within 5 seconds, he was completely engaged and participatory.
Would you describe what the Earth School is?
Sure. This is a name that I've given to the work that I'm doing with children, although it's actually a Native American understanding that they didn't have school buildings. And I often tell children this when I take them into the woods and we'll sit out in the natural amphitheater of the forest and talk about the fact that kids didn't used to have to go to school, and they all cheer. Because there isn't a single human being that doesn't love the idea of not being locked into a building or into a box. And we have expressions like being boxed in or cooped up, or, you know, bouncing off the walls. And something that I found in working with children in schools was that if I took them outdoors to do the same work we were doing inside, but just outdoors, they would tell me that they could focus better, that they found there were less distractions, and that they could think better. Mm-hmm. And if there's one thing that I would want to do is provide a child with an ecology within which they could think. The Native American understanding that brings this term about Earth School is that education is integrated with life, that nature is the best classroom, experience is the best teacher, and that your faculties are your tools. When I was at Brown University, I used to work as an admissions officer, and I used to conduct my interviews outdoors. And people will be more themselves when they're outside. They get uptight when they're sitting with their legs crossed, you know, in a chair or at a table. And as soon as you get people outside, there's what I call a dispersion field for their energy. One example is with children in the summer camp. When you work with lots and lots and lots of children all at once, all together in the same place, it's very noisy. Okay, any educator will know this. A school bus, there is nothing noisier. But if you're outdoors, the trees and the grass and everything, it absorbs a lot of that. And, you know, I find if children will come off the school bus from school into the woods and they'll say to me, can we just run? And they just want to let go. They just want to get it out. It's so constricted otherwise. So, you know, there have got to be ways to be able to do this as well inside the classroom. I'm not saying you have to only get outside the classroom, but my Earth School work is specifically intended to get outside of the building.
How can parents adapt Earth School principles at home?
This is a fantastic question, because a lot of what Earth School is about in native or original ways of education is really to do with respect and value and appreciation. And that is something that people can work with at home. I mean, certainly there can be an encouragement to the approach of hands-on learning and to exposing a child to as many channels as possible. But really, qualities are the most important thing in a human, and amount of academic education and skill comes second. And a lot of the work that we do or that I do inside of Earth School is trying to, for example, have a value and appreciation for simple things like the fact that there's a planet that we live on mm-hmm. and that it gives us everything we need. Living things deserve respect, all living things. If children can respect plants and trees, they can also respect each other. They can respect other humans and then also themselves, which is really, really crucial. Something that is very much a part of Earth School is helping, cleaning, being appreciative, being expressive of your appreciation for things. These are things which I find parents can support and also follow through on.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Barbara Sarbin today about hands-on learning.
Speaking to one parent, she said, "Yeah, my son won't go outdoors because he says there's nothing to do out there." And she lives on a property that has a lake, it has a pond, it's just full of woods. And she grew up on the property and she said she never went indoors. And I know when I was a child, I didn't go indoors either. But we didn't have computers and TV was very limited. It wasn't really that interesting anyway.
That's right.
You know, so one of the things that I found this summer is that the children who have had an imbalance of too much exposure to video games, the internet, these things called role-playing games, that they could be on a five-hour hike. We did a five-hour hike on the Appalachian Trail, and they don't see anything. They don't see a frog. They don't see a cricket. They don't see a blueberry. They are completely in their heads, and they continue to play these mental games with each other as they hike. And so 5 hours you come back, you could say, "How was it?" There's no recollection of where they just were. They walk through it blindly. And one of the children, we were making T-shirts of our favorite things, and he made a giant sign, and all it said was Nintendo. And that was it. Aww. And I just said, "This is a problem," because it's just too much.
It's such a loss.
And it is.
Receptors have shut down.
They have. And so the reason I'm mentioning it is because it's not, I mean, this might only apply to 5 children out of 35 children, but it's 5 children out of 35 children that will have this kind of obsession. So one thing I wanted to say was if I was in a situation at home where I could apply something, I would limit the amount of that a child is exposed to.
We agree with you 100%
on that. A lot of parent listeners are probably going, "Hear, hear."
In what ways do you work with homeschoolers and their parents?
Right. Homeschooling is an incredible commitment and dedication. And the parents and the children that I have worked with homeschool courses, there's a homeschoolers network where I live, and they invite me to do courses for their children. And the parents participate because that's how homeschooling works.
But do them in a group or do you visit each home?
No, it's in a group. They all come together and meet me in the forest. And I work in a nature center. And we all go together and do different kinds of processes. Because they're working together with all ages, there's no sort of unnatural separation of ages, which is something we do in school. You know, you're all with the same age child and one adult. But that in an original form of education, you'd be mixing with all ages all the time. So there is a kind of a balance in it and a warmth, a kindness, a respect that I have never met in other groups of children. So it is very special, and I promote it because if someone is able to do that, it's extraordinary.
How can parents and teachers get more information on the Earth School approach?
Well, they can email me, and my email address is eawest, that's E-A-W-E-S-T, at AOL.com.
You want to say that one more time?
Sure. eawest@aol.com.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we're very fortunate that Barbara Sarbin could be with us today to expose us to all these exciting teaching and learning ideas. Thank you very much for being here, Barbara.
Thank you. It was wonderful.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573. That's 1-800-791-8573. And let us know what station you're listening to as well. We'd like to send you Parents as Mentors. Parents as Mentors is available at all major bookstores and on the web. For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, just send a $5 check or money order to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. That's P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
You can reach Parents Perspective through your local station or call our toll-free number 1-800-791-8573. You can also email us at parentsper@aol.com. That's parentsper@aol.com. To learn more about us and our book Parents as Mentors, visit our website. It's a shortcut address, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.